live from Radio Row at the Tampa Convention Center in downtown Tampa. This is Florida Matters, the convention. I'm Carson Cooper, and the headline from Tampa this morning, hurry up and wait. The threat of Tropical Storm Isaac prompted the RNC over the weekend to postpone the convention by one day. But there is still plenty going on today. This hour, we'll meet the reporter who created quite a storm himself when he reported that Marco Rubio may have embellished his family's history about the time they left Cuba.
He didn't take the stage for a debate or run in a primary. Nevertheless, Isaac takes center stage at the Republican National Convention. What did the delegates do on their day off? Well, for one thing, they talked a lot about Charlie Crist's slow turn to a Democrat. And they went to a party or two. This is the Convention Today, No Convention Today edition. Good evening and welcome to the Convention Today. Special coverage from WUSF News, live from the site of the Republican National Convention, the Tampa Bay Times Forum. I'm Craig Kopp in my perch in the press box high above the convention floor, which didn't see much action today. The Republican National Convention was gaveled into session and immediately gaveled into a one-day recess thanks to concerns over Tropical Storm Isaac.
Mary is a professional escort in Tampa who says she specializes in selling more than just sex. And she says she's ready for the RNC.
They're out there. They're looking for me. I know they are, and I'm just waiting for them to find me. And if I can just be there and be ready, like, that's what it is.
She's just redone her website in preparation for the RNC. It now talks about creating an experience and escaping the pressures and limitations of reality. Language carefully chosen to appeal to a political audience.
Think about what type of people are coming. Who are Republicans? Who are these types of people that are going to be going here? Where do they go? How do they speak? What do they like? What do they not like? I kind of immerse myself in stuff like that because you start using language that those people understand and that attracts certain types of people.
The type that can afford to drop $500 an hour, with some sessions lasting several hours or even days.
Creating experiences with someone, talking about how the real world is so draining sometimes, and you just need a time and a space to relax and let go and just be. When you say that to like a workaholic, like type A personality, business, like high-powered type person, they understand that language.
And she knows during an event like the RNC, the competition is going to be fierce. Mary says it doesn't bother her, though. She's done her own traveling.
We travel all the time. We follow different conventions around, like sporting events, whatever it is. Yeah, political events. Yeah, of course. People will fly in and travel, absolutely.
There's a lot of traveling with prostitution, especially with the high-end market. A lot of women will kind of, there's like a, apparently like an informal circuit.
That's Scott Cunningham, a Baylor University economics professor who studied the demand for prostitutes surrounding political conventions. He monitored ads on the now-defunct Craigslist erotic services page during the 2008 Democratic and Republican national conventions.
We're looking at Denver on the day of the conventions compared to Denver on the day that there's no conventions. We sort of are able to sort of isolate the unique effect that the conventions had on prostitution advertisements.
He says, depending on the city, there was a 29% to 77% increase in prostitution advertisements during the convention. But that leaves an important question. Did prostitution actually increase?
What we don't find, or what we don't look at, is we do not have data on prostitution transactions.
Mary says she doesn't need any data. She's confident she will see an increase in transactions during the RNC. So confident, she's taken some special steps to prepare.
I'm also redoing my breast, and I timed my surgery around it because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't going to be recovering during that time.
And instead, focus on the mental aspect of the job.
In order to be prepared to embrace people as they are and hold space for them, I have to really go within myself, and I have to take care of myself and feel good with myself so that I can be there and hold that space for other people.
But just how much space will she need? We'll have to wait until the RNC to find out. For WUSF 89.7 News, I'm Sarah Pusateri.
Of all the sounds being heard around Tampa during this Republican National Convention, this is, well, unexpected.
So you got the guys on foot going by, doing that whole number.
That is the sound of an RNC protester, and he is not being polite. He is describing his take on the police presence outside the protester camp known as Romneyville. There's been plenty of talk about protesters coming into town for the RNC. So far, their presence has been less than expected, but they are here. And after the delegates go back to their hotels and the news media put away their pens, their microphones, their cameras, the protesters blow off steam just like everybody else. WUSF's Eric Mennel spent some time last night with anarchists after dark.
After a long day of marching and chanting, most protesters in the tent camp known as Romneyville are trying to get some sleep.
We have the constant helicopter flying overhead to, give us our soothing white noise to sleep to.
But this protester, who asked not to be named, had just climbed down from the billboard behind the camp. He hung a banner to overlook the nearby interstate entrance. The banner is basically a white bed sheet with water bottles tied to the bottom to weigh it down.
It gets pointed across and it says real big on it, just GOP 1%, go home. They need to know we don't want them here.
Have you ever climbed that high before in your life?
Yeah, but I'm still, to this day, I hate going high up. I'm terrified of heights. My heart's still racing from being up there. I got the shakes a little bit. It's one thing being in a tall building. It's another thing just being out there in the open.
Even at night, some protesters can't help but stay out in the open. In Ybor City, a few dozen protesters held what they called a roving radical dance party.
Dance for peace! Dance for anarchy!
It was sort of a hybrid demonstration. Some of the most hardcore activists gathered around a boombox and a megaphone and danced through the streets. For Josh Coppola, it's as much about relaxing as it is being heard.
You can just let it out. It's a release. It's engaging that primal sense that we seem to have forgotten in our cubicles and in our commutes. We just gotta let it go and let loose and open up.
Some of them move like snakes flowing down 7th Street. Others bang their heads and raise their fists. During the day, protesters march in the secure zone, where they're separated from the convention by miles of fence and nearly 4,000 police officers. But at night, in Ybor City, the fences are gone, and the bars are filled with convention goers. It's the first time that the two groups come face to face.
We're very close to them. They're partying right now, and we are watching them as they film us. They hear our message loud and clear.
There's some jeering from the bystanders. But it's mostly in good fun. In a way, both groups entertain each other. But dancing or not, protesters can't be on the move all the time. So the next night, I met up with a self-described anarchist named Serendipity to see what she and other protesters do in their downtime.
During a day that I've been like marching all day, and I've probably marched more than 6 miles or something like that, on days like those, I'd most definitely like to end it at a bar.
Just a block away from hobnobbing convention goers, about a dozen anarchists gather in G Bar, a gay bar offering free drinks and free entry. It's a block of black shirts and black jeans in an otherwise colorful room.
It's hilarious. All the protesters are on this side and all the, locals are on that side.
Serendipity says it's nice to be in a place where you're not performing and not being watched.
When all of the activists get together, something like this, there's no cops around. There's no, pending big brother watching over us. Nobody has, their live stream out. It's much more you're a person, and I'm a person. Let's actually get to know each other now.
It's a time to relax and recharge so they can get up tomorrow and do it again. Eric Mennel, WUSF 89.7 News.
I'm Susan Johns, One Tech. It's been years in the planning, months in the execution, and tonight the Republican National Convention convenes in Tampa. So far, it's been a mixed bag for local businesses and everyday folks. In our daily feature, Voices on the Street, the Tampa Bay Business Journal editor talks about how the RNC is benefiting the area, how it has impacted a local restaurant just outside the security zone, we'll hear that, and how a homeless newspaper vendor sees it all.
My name's Mike Gentry, and I'm a vendor for Epoch, the homeless newspaper. More than anything, I'm seeing a lot of protesters. I've seen a lot of generous people come through, and the cops have been very gracious, you know, as far as that's concerned. They've been really informative about what they're going to do in the area. That, you know, the cops are always nice to me, but they've been reaching out, especially now, making sure that I'm okay, that nobody's bothering me. I did security purposes.
I'm Eric Weinstein, the director of operations for Zudars on Platt Street. We're a small business, certified small business enterprise, which was supposed to give us some preferential treatment on some of the catering and special event things that were happening in the area. And unfortunately, I think because of our location and perceived difficulty in being able to get out, it's not happened for us. So, well, we had some positive benefits last week, but so far, of course, this week we're off to a slow start. And the security measures have impacted us in an extreme negative way. We had hoped people would be able to come here from the event area, and with the bridges being closed to both traffic and pedestrian traffic, it's had a significant negative effect on us. Furthermore, the barricades up at Platt Street and Plant Avenue have been a real obstacle, and unfortunately, we've had many calls from people saying, well, are you open? Can we get there? It looks like it's all blocked off. And as you can see, we've got there's seven tables filled. Normally, this restaurant would be standing line only right now, even at this time of day. So obviously, we're hurting pretty bad.
My name is Tilly Noya, and I'm marketing executive for Sabor a Cuba, Inc., in out of Dunedin, Florida. I set up cigar demonstration events for the company. We are having a lot of events this week. The sales have gone up. And, you know, summer is our worst time. And this has really been great. By the end of the week, we would have done about 10. So that's a very good week for us. It's amazing. Before this week, I have not done anything since the 1st of June. So that gives you an idea of how much this was needed for us to kind of make it through. And we needed the business. We needed the economic impact that it's doing in the rest of the city.
The Republican National Convention is postponing today's events because of Tropical Storm Isaac, but the weather didn't stop GOP headliner appearances throughout the Tampa Bay region on Sunday. Tea partiers gathered in a church for anybody but Obama. Donald Trump talked birth certificates in Sarasota. And as WUSF's John O'Connor reports, U.S. Representative Ron Paul rallied supporters at the University of South Florida.
Ron Paul threw a raucous pep rally to mark the end of his third and possibly final presidential campaign. Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney will accept the GOP presidential nomination later this week. But Paul told thousands at the University of South Florida Sundome that the Republican Party wouldn't be able to keep their ideas at arm's length.
So this to me is exciting with the energy that we have. It seems to me that they would be begging and pleading for us to come into the party.
The six-hour rally was a miniature convention. Ryan Novak and Will Watson came to show their support. Watson converted Novak to Paul during late-night conversations when they roomed together. Novak says he likes the simplicity of Paul's beliefs.
And it just over time, the Ron Paul message sunk in, and I started to see that politics is more about first determining what you believe is right and then making your decisions based on that. And I think sometimes that gets turned around, that people just want something to happen and it doesn't actually mesh with their core ideals, but they just go with it anyway. That's what kind of got me full steam ahead in this movement.
But Tim Davis of West Palm Beach is angry at Romney. He says Romney supporters blocked Paul delegates from the convention. Davis says he doesn't feel welcome by some Republicans.
No place in Mitt Romney's section, though. There is no place for us there.
You feel welcome?
No, not at all. Not at all. We feel cheated.
Davis says those at the rally will still be activists even if Paul retires from politics. At the Sundome, I'm John O'Connor.
And I'm Rick Stone at Sarasota's Ritz-Carlton Hotel, where Donald Trump found a way to criticize Mitt Romney.
Jonathan Milton spends 6 or 7 days a week at Tampa's Powerhouse Gym training for an upcoming fitness contest. He passes the time by streaming Pandora Internet Radio on his iPhone.
I'm usually listening to dubstep. It's a new style. It's becoming really popular.
The music helps Milton really concentrate on his workouts, which last about 2 hours of pop.
I like to get what they call in the zone.
One thing that takes him out of the zone?
Obama's second term would be a rerun of the first, and our country just couldn't survive.
So read my plan. Compare it to Governor Romney's.
Political ads.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this
message. I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
American Crossroads is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Milton knows he could pay $3.99 a month to subscribe to Pandora's commercial-free service, but hardly any of Pandora's 58 million users actually do that, says the company's vice president of ad sales, Sean Duggan.
When users sign up, we ask for three pieces of information. We ask for age, gender, and zip code, and that's the primary way that every ad is served on Pandora.
Milton, who's 30 and lives in St. Petersburg, is an attractive target, and if a Pandora advertiser wants to reach Milton, be it a political candidate or a pizzeria, he can't dodge the ad just by changing stations.
The way terrestrial radio has been bought for years, you know, you buy country, you buy rock, you buy hip-hop or classical to reach a specific age and gender, you know, we actually have that information. We can actually just give you 18 to 24, and we can get, you know, even the kids who are listening to classical music, who you might not reach if you were just buying a rock station.
Last spring, Pandora hired its first ever political ad director. That's why when residents of swing states turn to online entertainment to try to avoid political ads, they often run right into them. Streaming TV sites like Hulu work pretty much the same way as Pandora, but with a twist. For example, the Obama campaign runs Hulu Ad Selector, which lets viewers decide
which ad experience do you prefer?
Say, a commercial about taxes, education, or the economy. Duggan says Pandora could be running even more political ads than it already does.
My guess is a lot of people in states like Florida and other places are looking for a place to get away from the ads at this point. We're a safe haven from that because our ad experience is still consistent. Certain states where we know we probably could have had more ads an hour, we've kept it to basically one audio ad every 20 minutes.
But even that's overkill for Milton. Although Pandora can tip off advertisers to Milton's age, gender, and zip code, there's one other bit of information political candidates would have found useful: his religion.
I'm a Jehovah's Witness, and basically we don't get involved when it comes to politics. We stand neutral on that.
In other words, he's not planning to vote at all. Dalia Colon, WUSF 89.7 News.
From WNYC New York and the Mostly Swing States Radio Network, this is a convention night call-in on WUSF Tampa, WCPN Cleveland, WUNC Chapel Hill, WAMU. John O'Connor from WUSF, you're in Tampa all the time, not just for convention week. Do you think Florida is a rich place for stories of political formation?
It absolutely is. The great thing about Florida is that most people aren't from here. And so you talk to people, and they've come to Florida to make a new start in some cases. They have that entrepreneurial spirit, the idea of self-dependence, self-reliance, that they can get something going on their own. And so I've heard those stories over and over again. You'll hear probably a little bit from Marco Rubio tonight talking about his parents. You know, his dad worked as a bartender in a hotel. His mom worked as a housekeeper, and they relied on the generosity of the customers of those businesses to keep the family going. And that's kind of a common story.
WUSF News has had a big contingent of reporters, producers, and technicians dedicated to this week's coverage of the Republican National Convention, all of whom saw the convention from all of its angles up close and personal, and not all of what they saw made it on the air. Today, producer Annie Stevens went in search of the lost stories of the RNC.
Natasha Sam Rainey, reporter for Team Economics.
One of the funniest moments was during the Unity Rally, which was for the Tea Party. In the middle of the young organizer's speech at the end, he was talking about how to fix big government, and someone stood up and yelled out from the crowd, "Fire the IRS!"
John O'Connor, politics reporter.
I thought the wackiest moment was looking around the press box during Clint Eastwood's speech Thursday night and trying to figure out what people were thinking based on the kind of dazed and stunned and confused looks on their faces as he talked to an empty stool.
Scott Finn, news director, what about your moment?
I was walking into the protest zone with former Tampa Mayor Pam Iorio, and she was confronted with a Romney supporter. Of course, everyone's knowing her, and they're saying, "Hey, Mayor, how you doing?" She says, "Hey, Mayor, how's the new job? How does it feel to fire a whole bunch of people?" And she said, "I don't know. You're the guy that supports Mitt Romney, right? You tell me." And everybody cracks up. He cracks up. The police cracks up. It's like, oh, you got him.
Mark Schreiner, protest and security reporter.
It was at a press conference where the women from Code Pink were there. They wore their costumes, vagina costumes, and a Spanish reporter came up and asked, do any of the vaginas speak Spanish?
Reporter Carmel Delchat, what about you?
Going to the Google Lounge is really awesome. Doing a story about what journalists are doing in there, but the funniest thing about the Google Lounge is they had a coffee shop set up there by a local coffee shop in Tampa, and they had the area where you can get your straws and sugar and all that. They had red straws and blue straws. So I was like, I feel like this is a trick question. So after that, Sarah Pizzeri and I were like, excuse me, sir, why did you pick the red straw instead of the blue straw? And then the guy was like, I'm going to get the blue straw also so I can be nonpartisan.
Eric Minnell, reporter for the security team. What about you?
I decided one night to go out to a bar with a bunch of protesters and try to do a story on what they do after hours. They really wanted me to drink with them. And so one of the protesters kept holding the drink in my face and giving me like a puppy dog face. And I just had this moment where I thought, I planned on there being riots this week. I thought I was going to be tear gassed. I thought I would wind up in jail. And instead, I'm here in a bar in Ybor City at 11 p.m., with a bunch of protesters giving me puppy dog faces.
Dustin Happily, operations manager. What about you?
Every day, there would be this vendor standing out in front of the security gate with a book called The Cat and the Mitt. It is a parody of The Cat in the Hat, in which Obama is the cat and Mitt Romney is the wise fish. It was written by Dr. Truth as opposed to Dr. Seuss.
And I have a feeling they're just scratching the surface. That's our show for today and for this Republican National Convention. We've had a group of hardworking reporters, obviously, who have contributed to the convention today this week. In no particular order, they are Bobby O'Brien, Steve Newborn, Rick Stone, Eric Mennel, Carmen Deshad, Natasha Samarini, Mark Schreiner, John O'Connor, Gina Jordan, and Joe Solis Ramos. Thanks, everybody. Absolutely great work. The convention today is produced by Annie Stevens. Our technical director is Brian Brl. Our director, Dustin Happily, and the executive producer of the convention today is Scott Finn. And I'm Craig Kopp from the studios of WUSF. Thanks for listening all week long. Have a great weekend.